Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
So many patients come to BetterHelp looking for help with anxiety and depression and trying to get to the root of these issues.
But as we begin to dig deeper, we find out that at the core, you know, they're dealing with things that they might have brought with them from childhood.
Oftentimes, the roots of our anxiety are deeply rooted in family issues.
Having been able to access therapy online has had a tremendous impact on my clients' lives.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today. To get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and this is Stuff You Should Know featuring Yeri.
That's right. Interesting history a-dish.
Yes, man. I remember hearing this story back as an undergrad.
Okay.
A hot, sexy undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Boy, were you.
In learning my history.
Yeah?
I can't remember what class. It must have been a European history class, but this probably. Book just always stuck with me. The Return of Martin Guerre by Natalie Zeman Davis.
Did you read it back then?
Yeah. It was assigned as part of the class. It was a great, great book.
But did you read it?
Yes.
Okay.
I was a very eager, hot, sexy undergrad history major.
Well, I mean, that's why I majored in English, because I like to read. So anytime they assigned a reading assignment, I was like, great, I can do that.
Yeah, that was one reason I chose history, is because I really enjoyed reading history stuff. So I was like, well, if that's what we're going to be sitting around doing, let's do it. I don't know what I'll do with it afterward with that degree, but we'll roll the dice and find out.
You envisioned a future career where two lunkheads with no previous broadcast experience could become, dare I say, noteworthy by talking into a can.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gambling on lucking out to an astounding degree.
Yeah, me too, sort of. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Funny how life works.
Well, it all worked out, and here we are all these years later to tell the story of Martin. Is it pronounced Guerre?
I've always pronounced it Martin Guerre, but
Guerre?
We're going to go to 16th century France, so it's probably Martin Guerre.
Okay.
But we're not going to say it like
But not Richard Guerre.
No.
Which is ironic.
Yeah.
Because Richard Guerre.
Right.
Was the lead in the movie Summersby.
Yes, which
was, see, look at your improv skills, yes anding me.
Right.
It was a sort of a, not necessarily a remake, but an adaptation on the story of Martin Guerre and the movie that starred Gérard Depardieu from the early 1980s.
Yes, and?
I think that's it.
Okay.
No, but is okay, how we end.
Yeah. Had you heard this story before, the story of Martin Guerre?
Yeah, a little bit. I certainly didn't know it like I know it now, but I did see the movie Summersby back then. And I knew it was kind of based on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been other versions of stories like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not the least of which is a story told in animation form about a man, young man off to war named Armin Tanzarian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even put two and two together.
Sure, when Principal Skinner took someone's identity during the war. And it's sort of a common story, but this is, I think, the OG.
Yeah, thanks for that, too, because we would have gotten myriad emails telling us what utter failures we are in life for missing that Simpsons reference.
Yeah, that was his name, right? Armin Tanzarian?
Totally.
Man, can you imagine how fun the writer's room was that day trying to come up with what his real name would be?
That's right. You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, that's Matt Groening's least favorite Simpsons episode,
or
it was at the time, years ago. Yeah,
oh,
for some reason he hated
it.
That one. I don't know why.
Huh. All right.
I love it, too. It's good. So we're talking about a man named Martin Guerre who was like born a peant in 16th century France in the Languedoc region in this like little area just above Spain, just below Toulouse, if that makes sense for you. And like, typically, Chuck, when people live and die in areas like this, unless they do something spectacularly interesting or noteworthy or important, they just kind of get lost to history.
Sure.
And this guy, Martin Guerre, actually didn't do anything spectacularly interesting or important or noteworthy. And yet we're still talking about him like 450-ish years, more than that, later. Because his life, something happened to his life that was so interesting mm-hmm. that it's worth doing an entire podcast episode about all these years later.
Agreed. He was born in Spain to a Basque family mm-hmm. and pretty quickly as a toddler was brought over to France to, how would you pronounce that? Artigat?
Mm-hmm.
Or Artajat? Or is it Gat?
I think Gat.
Okay.
Yeah, because cake is gâteau and it begins with G.
Oh, look at you. Uh-huh. All right, so Artigat. And his family got there, and they got to work pretty quickly, setting themselves up in different trades like farming, eventually tile making and merchanting.
Nice.
And did okay. Like, they didn't have any kind of money, but they worked hard and sort of rose through that lower-tiered status to the point where they could marry off young Martin to another family, the de Roles family, who— You know, I think Dave Ruse, our buddy who put this together for us, he said that they were well off, but I think they were well off for their lower class, though, right?
Yeah, they were up and coming, he puts it. And I think like they were peasant farmers figuring out how to enter the merchant class, which at the time was the very beginning of the middle class.
Okay, all right. Well, that makes sense then.
Yeah. So they were working their way up into the middle class. So, It was a like kind of a coup, I take it, for the Guerre family to marry off Martin to Bertrand de Roles,
when they
because
were
their family was a little better off. But yeah, they were really young. Apparently, later on, Bertrand recalled that they were married at age like 9 or 10. Apparently, that doesn't add up, and that was probably more like 13 or 14. So you know, that's fine.
Right. Still very young, but this is the 16th century after all. Mm-hmm. So they got married, and, you know, when you get married back then, you want to start having babies pretty quickly. And they had a hard time having babies because for the first 8 years of their marriage, they did not consummate their marriage. And no one knows exactly why. There were rumors maybe that Martin wasn't, or Martin just wasn't into it. They were 13 after all, so maybe, you know, they were normal children who kind of thought that wasn't the thing to do yet. I don't know.
Or he was like, how do I work this?
He just sounded like David Byrne in Once in a Lifetime.
Right.
Some people blamed it on a witch's curse. They eventually consulted with a wise woman who said, go to these series of masses at church mm-hmm. because mass is always guaranteed to make you randy. and eat a special cake that would sort of get him going downstairs. And apparently it worked.
Crazy.
Because they had a baby. They had a little son.
Like right afterward. It was a cake made of fireplace ashes, I saw.
But, you know, and they're like, in the early 20s at this point, by the way.
Yeah.
Like the appropriate age for that kind of thing.
Right. It makes you wonder, though, like, was it self-imposed and, like, he was able to feel like this curse or whatever was lifted off of him from eating that cake. But regardless, it happened like almost immediately. Bertrand got pregnant and they had a son named Sanxi, who was the same name of Martin's father. So Martin said, hey, this is really amazing. I've really turned a new corner in life. I'm really interested to see what life brings me now. And just got back to work with a son and wife, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I think there's really no other way to describe Martin. Everything I read, basically, it sounds like he was a real a-hole.
Yes, that was the impression I had, too.
He was not a nice guy. He was not a nice husband. I didn't see anything necessarily about, like, overt abuse, but he just seemed like a real jerk, sort of to his family and around town. And he was kind of looking to get out of town. And his father accused him of stealing grain from the family stores and then selling it for a profit, which was not cool, even if it's your own family. It's probably more uncool
right.
that it's your own family. And so
never trust family, Chuck.
Never trust family. That's on the shirt. But instead of saying like, wait a minute, I want to defend myself, he just took off and he's like, sorry, wife and young son, but I don't really like you guys that much anyway, so I'm out of here.
I see him as like an early 20s Gen Xer. It's like, whatever, man.
Right.
I can't deal with this at all. I'm out of here.
Uh-huh.
And you get the impression that he was just looking for a reason to leave, and he did. He got it. He didn't defend himself, which, I mean, in 16th century France or Basque culture, that is something you would want to do if your honor was being impugned. That was one of the few currencies you had.
Yeah.
So you would want to defend yourself. So I think it says a lot about somebody at that time who didn't even bother defending himself. He just left.
Mm-hmm.
And he left his wife and child. Without providing for them in any way. Like, sure, they had like his you know, inheritance, his money, his share of whatever the family owned, but he didn't like set them up in any way before he left. He just put down his plowshare, put down his tile making tongs, and just left.
That's right. He ended up in Spain. He went back to Spain, settled in Burgos, Burgos.
Sure.
And became a servant for a noble family. And they noticed, like, hey, dude, you're a pretty good fencer. You're good with the sword.
Right.
We should get you armied up. So he joined the Spanish army, who was at war with France at the time. And he fought for 5 years before. And this is a very key detail, I think, before we go into our first break, that he was hit in the leg with a bullet and had his leg amputated.
Yes.
So we'll take a break, hang on to that, put a pin in it, and we'll be right back.
Hey everybody, it's time to talk about Squarespace. Squarespace has absolutely everything you could possibly need to build whatever website you're trying to. You can host video content and organize your entire video library, plus showcase it on beautiful video pages. You can use analytics to grow your business and learn where your site visits and sales are coming from. What else, Chuck?
Well, buddy, if you got merch, then you can sell it on Squarespace. You can easily sell custom merch and create a passive income stream that engages your audience and scales your brand. Design your products, and production, inventory, and shipping are all handled for you, saving you time and money.
Yeah, and if your business is appointment-based, you can accept appointments on your Squarespace website. You can offer online or in-person private sessions, workshops, and group classes. And Squarespace provides everything you need to manage your schedule, accept secure payments, and send automatic reminders, all in a beautifully showcased site.
So just go to squarespace.com/stuff and you're going to get a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by our friends at Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, where trailblazing runs in the family.
That's right, from introducing a generation to the glory of hops with their iconic pale ale to taking hazy IPAs nationwide with Hazy Little Thing, one of my favorite beers, it's an adventurous spirit that you can taste in every sip.
Yeah, what started in a homebrew shop is now one of America's top craft breweries, known for leading the industry in sustainability. And Sierra Nevada is still family-owned, with a passion for innovation and doing things right.
So find your next favorite beer wherever fine beverages are sold, from the original and always boldly hoppy pale ale to the juicy, fruit-forward, hazy little thing. With new brews for every season, there's always something to discover.
Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. Visit SierraNevada.com today to taste the difference.
Hey, everybody. Summer is the perfect time for gathering with friends and family in the backyard to enjoy premium cuts of meat, fresh seasonal produce, and more. And of course, we're talking about Whole Foods Market.
And speaking of that meat, you can fire up the grill with premium cuts of meat like no antibiotics ever beef, New York strip steak, and beautifully marbled boneless beef ribeye steak. Your grill will thank you.
And you can also grab and go. Whole Foods Market has grab and go favorites like packaged salads, appetizers, and sides. They're really perfect for bringing to any kind of potluck barbecue.
Yes, plus don't forget dessert. Every gathering needs dessert. You can dig into limited time seasonal pies from their experts in the bakery.
Or how about some adult beverages? You can always fill up that cooler with some summer beers, seltzers, sparkling wine, canned wines, and more. Must be 21 plus, of course, and please drink responsibly.
So make Whole Foods Market your summer grilling destination. So let's zero in on Bertrand for a little while, shall we?
The wife, if you don't remember, is Bertrand.
Yes, Bertrand de Rolls. Who became married to Martin Guerre at maybe age 9 to 14, depending on who you ask.
Yes, seemed like a savvy young woman.
Yes, now this is new. We got to say this. So like Natalie Zeman Davis, you mentioned that film, The Return of Martin Guerre, starring Gerard Depardieu, that Summersbee was partly based on, right?
Correct.
She was the consultant on that, the historical consultant on that film. And she was so put off by the retelling of this story that she published her book 2 years afterward.
Oh,
and
okay.
Part of that book, part of her big contribution, she made tons of contributions to the historical record, turned up a lot of great documents and everything. But subjectively, her big contribution was completely altering the way people saw Bertrand.
Yeah.
Up to this point, she was a loyal, chaste, devoted wife who would end up being duped, you could say, as we'll see very soon. And under Natalie Zeman Davis's reading of her, she was a very shrewd woman who figured out how to navigate within the confines of a male-dominated middle-age French society.
Yeah, and one of the first things that we can bring up to sort of support this, and I kind of like this narrative a lot, by the way, is the fact that she got married when she was, let's say, 13. Just meet there in the middle. And, you know, Martine had problems, you know, having sex for 8 years. And so she was, it's speculated from Davis, at least, that she was kind of like, hey, this isn't so bad. I don't want to be doing that anyway,
right?
Especially with this kid who's a jerk. And I don't want to have a kid. I'm 13 years old. So by the time, you know, he's got four sisters. I really love them. He's, you know, his family seems to be doing okay. My family's doing okay. At the time, that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that she had to wait till she was in her early 20s to finally, I expect lose her virginity to Martin. Mm-hmm. And then have this kid wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, because she could have asked for the marriage to be annulled after 3 years passed without it being consummated.
Sure.
By under French law at the time, I think French Catholic law. And she didn't. That definitely substantiates Zeman Davis's claim that like she was just kind of rolling with it. She was like, okay, I'm kind of happy with this.
And she didn't try and get married when he left either. There were a lot of strict laws about remarrying, like if the husband disappears or something. Mm-hmm. You had to have proof of death with witnesses and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was basically like, hey, I'm kind of a widow here. His uncle, Pierre, is married to my mom now. They're taking really good care of me. Got a lot of help with my baby. So I'm pretty cool to just chill here.
Yeah. So in this reading, she's saying, Natalie Zeman Davis is saying, like, she didn't have a choice. Like, again, under French Catholic law at the time, like, not even when a husband has been absent 20 years or more can a wife remarry unless she has proof of his death. And it's got to be like like irrefutable proof that this person has died, their husband's died. She didn't have the irrefutable proof, but she didn't also, she didn't like go like take lovers. She didn't ask to have an exception made for her. And so it painted her image among the townsfolk and among her family that she was a chaste, devoted wife mm-hmm. who was just going to wait for her lousy husband for as long as it took. And then also Chuck, on the converse side of that, that just goes to show you just how fully and selfishly Martin abandoned her, mm-hmm. knowing full well that she couldn't remarry because she wouldn't have any proof of his death. So he left her in limbo, like even more. It wasn't even like a, I'm leaving, good luck with your life, you do what you want with it. It was, I'm leaving, you have to stick around and wait until I decide to come back, if ever.
That's right. So things are going along like this. She's living her life. Again, has plenty of help with her baby. And then one day in town at a hostel, a man wanders in and says, hi, I'm Martine Guerre, and I'm back, everybody. Like, check it out. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. The innkeeper says, you know, oh my God, your wife, Bertrand, and your son, it's so exciting to be reunited. And he breaks down crying. And everyone, of course, in town comes running up and to see who this person is, including his wife. And they all went, huh, you look a little different, Martin. Right. I think that's how they initially approached it.
Well, because he did. Apparently he'd gotten shorter, heavier, his nose had changed.
His lip wasn't as droopy.
Let's read that. There's a description from later court records that would happen of what Martin Guerre supposedly looked like. Can I read this?
Please.
Martin Guerre was taller and darker than this man who showed up. He was a man thin in body and legs, a little bent, carrying his head between his shoulders, the chin cleft like Huey Lewis, a little thrust forward, whose lower lip drooped a little, having small teeth, a large and flattened nose, an ulcer on his face, and a scar on his right eyebrow. This person was short, thick-set, strong of body, having a heavy leg, does not have a flat nose, nor is bent, nor has any of said scars. So an entirely different-looking person showed up and was like, hey, everybody, remember me? Martin Guerre.
Right. And it's important to note here that no one in town knew that Martin had lost his leg in the war.
Yeah.
So that was obviously would have been the biggest red flag. Mm-hmm. But this guy comes back, and he doesn't look like him, but he knows all the stories.
Yes,
he's saying like, hey, remember when we did this? And he would hang out with the townspeople and he'd say, God, remember that time we did that? Mm-hmm. And this great time we had over here doing this. And everyone's just like, oh my gosh. Like, he knows all the stories. It doesn't look like him, but you know what? This guy's kind of fun and awesome and nice.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to him in the war, but like, we'll take him.
Yes. So 8 years had passed and he apparently physically changed drastically, but also most notably, his personality had changed distinctly for the better. He was a charmer now. And like you said, he remembered all of these stories. So everybody said, let's see where this goes, basically.
Yeah. And there's another key move here we need to point out. Right away, he didn't just go back to the family farm and to the family house right. with everyone. He said, you know what? I have the pox. I'm not feeling so great. So let me stay here at the hostel for a little bit and recover, which turned out to be a very sort of savvy key move.
Yes.
He put one a pin of the in other, that, too.
One of the other things that he did, too, that definitely convinced Bertrand and others who were there, he said, by the way, I'm going to stay here and recover until I'm done with this pox. But can you go fetch my white stockings, my white hose, from this particular drawer in this particular chest where I mm-hmm. left them 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And she went back and went to that particular chest and drawer and found his white socks were there just as she remembered him leaving them there 8 years ago. So like that and a bunch of other stuff that he seemed to remember that only Martin would know really convinced everybody that, nope, this is Martin. He's a little different, but we like him even more now and we're going to get along with him just fine.
Right. And Bertrand also was like, and the other thing is, when you left, you were not very interested in sex from me.
Right.
And you seem to be really into that now. And so I'll take that as well. And in fact, I will give birth to two daughters in return. Sadly, only one of them survived infancy, and her name was, is it Bernard or Bernarda?
Bernard.
Okay, I didn't know that could be a little girl's name back then.
I think when you add an E on the end, it girls it up.
Okay, but you don't pronounce E.
No. No, it's all just for looks.
Okay. All right, so to catch up, he's back in town. Everyone likes the new and improved Martin Guerre. He has another daughter, and he's having sex with his wife, and everything's going great until who becomes his main foil gets involved, and that would be his uncle Pierre.
And remember, so Pierre Guerre, he's another main character in this. He, by this time, after Martin left, married Bertrand's mother. So now he's Bertrand's uncle-in-law and father-in-law, or stepfather.
Yeah. Uncle,
so
dad.
Uncle-in-law and stepfather, that's right. And at first, he welcomed this new improved Martin back in it with open arms. He was credulous at first, and then he won him over with some memories, the new Martin did. Yeah. And so Pierre said, okay, let's go with it. And everybody was kind of going along and getting along. And then I guess one day Martin said, hey, by the way, Pierre, you remember my inheritance, my part of the land and my part of the wealth that I left behind that you've been managing? Well, I know you made a bunch of money off of it. I feel like that's my money. So can I have my money, Pierre? Can I please? And Pierre didn't like that idea at all. And it's not clear whether he just didn't like that idea or whether he didn't like that idea because he didn't think this was Martin after all and this guy was overstepping his bounds. I don't know. But one of the things that he did was assemble his sons to try to beat Martin to death on the road. And had it not been for Bertrand throwing herself on top of Martin's body, they probably would have succeeded in murdering him.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like, I fill in a little bit of the narrative blanks just as, you know, someone who's into movies and literature and stuff. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like Pierre was kind of like, hey, everyone seems to like this guy, so I'm not going to be the one to stand in the way.
Who am I to rock the boat?
He didn't want to rock the boat until this money thing came up. And that's Martin actually took him to court. And that's when things really changed. And that's when Pierre started talking to anyone who would listen and saying, you know what? He's Basque and he doesn't understand these Basque phrases. This dude was a great fencer. This guy's no fencer. He's not even into it at all. He doesn't look anything like his son. And I think this guy is a fraud. And it's interesting that the town, like, it seems to be, and we'll get to the court case, but it seemed to be almost divided whether or not people said, no, we think it's him and it's all good. And people have said, no, I think he is a fraud. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show sort of the power of those stories, because at the time in 16th century France, how else would you explain something like, you know, hey, remember that time we went and pushed over that cow and I did a dance on him, on his belly?
Right.
Like, you know, that's a powerful thing back then when you don't have photographs and any other kind of shared recollection that you can easily point to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he fooled a lot of people.
Yeah, he definitely did. I wonder how much he was playing on people's propensity to not want to admit a mistake or that they were wrong,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that plays into it, I'm sure.
It's got to. But like you said, the town was divided, and it was divided between Pierre and then this new Martin. And very crucially, on the side of this new Martin was Bertrand. Mm-hmm. She cast her lot with him and said, yep. No, this man is Martin Guerre. I will, anyone who is mad enough to say otherwise, I will make him die.
Yeah.
Which is a weird way to create yeah. a death threat, but it was a death threat nonetheless. But this was despite Bertrand's mother, who was Pierre's wife, mm-hmm. coming to her and being like, look, you need to get with Pierre here. He's on the side of right. And she still said no. So, Pierre also, he had, there were people who backed him up, like the shoemaker, right?
Yeah, there was a little matter of the fact, and this was in Somersby too, that he came back from the war with a different foot size.
That's a big change. That's a very drastic change.
It is.
And technically he did come back with a different foot size, but in a radically different way.
Well, yeah, because everything changed in 1559. He'd been back a few years at this point, and a Spanish soldier wanders through town and heard about this story of Martin Guerre and said, hey, wait a minute. I knew that guy during the war, and mm-hmm. he's only got one leg. And it's like, that's when it's like Mike Brady throwing the briefcase in the courtroom.
Wow.
Just a hush falls over the crowd.
Yeah.
And he said, no, this, in fact, is an imposter, an mm-hmm. interloper. And I believe he is Arnaud Dutil, and he is a Spanish man of ill repute.
Yes. So Pierre, got word out to nearby villages and confirmed this, that it probably was a guy named Arnaud Dutil, who was from a town about 30 miles away called Sajas, S-A-J-A-S, mm-hmm. I think
probably you're right.
That's about a day or two of travel from Artigat. So it's far enough away, but close enough that you could confirm or deny whether somebody was someone from that town, right?
Yeah, and this guy, you know, he's a bit of a roughhouser. He drank a lot and he gambled and he bedded down with sex workers and had a big appetite. I mean, Gerard Depardieu played this guy, for God's sake. So that kind of tells you all you need to know.
Right.
All right. So this guy all of a sudden is seemingly found out. But the story is that he went off, joined the French army, this Arnaud guy. And the question is, like, did he meet Martin on the battlefield? What we ended up finding out much later is that a couple of old friends of Martin actually mistook him for Martin initially, and then were like, you look just like our friend, this guy back in small-town France who's actually got a pretty good pretty good prospects monetarily waiting for him back home, mm-hmm. and this pretty good-looking wife. And all of a sudden, the wheels start turning in Arnaud's mind.
Right. It's not clear whether those two ended up becoming accomplices or else if he was just able to kind of like work info out of them over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that does seem to be, I think he later admitted that's where he got the idea.
He's like, how much do I look like him?
Right, exactly. Oh, spinning image men.
Oh, goodness.
He also was like really... really clever in that, like, he stayed behind at that hostel. Like, he first appeared at the hostel rather than showing up in town. That was a mm-hmm. big one. He stayed behind with the pox. I made scare quotes. So he could gather more information just slowly but surely. He just seemed like the type who could get something out of you without you realizing it because you were just having a good time hanging out with him.
Right. Like, I wonder if he was like, yeah, because remember that time we pushed over that cow? And the guy's like, oh, you mean the horse that time when we did this? He's like, oh, yeah, that was totally it.
Totally. I was so drunk, I remember it being a cow. And everybody starts laughing.
Right. But you didn't drink much back then. Well, I drank on the side. You didn't know.
It was secret.
Right.
I was also on the pills. That was German.
Yeah, you're really all over Europe right now.
So, and this is where Natalie Zeman Davis comes in. Like, it's clear that this guy was really good at getting information from people without them realizing that he was extracting information, using that information with his very, very good memory to lull you into a sense of security or trust for him that he was, to mm-hmm. overcome your instincts against trusting that he was who he said he was. But that no amount of preparation and research in the 16th century setting could have helped him get away with this so thoroughly without the help of Bertrand. That's Natalie Zeman Davis's, like, her thesis is like, there's no way that Bertrand was a dupe, that she wasn't complicit in that, you know, she probably, it's tough to blame her because her life improved dramatically after this guy showed up.
Yeah. I mean, if she would have caused a stink like Pierre did early on as the wife, it would have been a much, much different deal, I think, than her completely defending him. And Dave points out, we're never going to know. Like, he's in the town going to the pub and he's talking with people about the stories, but she's with him as wife full time mm-hmm. behind closed doors. And we'll never know what went on there. But in my mind, in the movie version, there's a scene at some point where she goes, hey, listen, I know you're not him, but it's okay because you're actually a nice guy and I can make this work.
Yeah. I think that Jodie Foster's famous line is, "Hey, bubs, let's cut the S."
Misa chica may.
Ne typo Nell.
Oh, boy. That was really good. I haven't seen Nell in so long.
I never have. I'm just putting my impression together from from previews I saw like 25 years ago, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it was a very good movie, or maybe I'm misremembering, or maybe I'm remembering exactly
I think
right.
We have to watch it.
Oh, boy. I want to watch this instead.
So this whole idea that Bertrand is a complicit, it's a new idea. It's a modern take. For centuries, she was, in the storytelling, she was duped. Like, that's how good and wily this Arnaud Dutille was at being an imposter. He duped the man's wife. That's how good he was. And when you hear that, and then you hear Natalie Zeman Davis's take, you're like, well, that's a pretty ridiculous idea. But that's how it was. And and as we'll see, Bertrand was never persecuted or prosecuted for her role in it. She got out of it as well.
Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's.
All right, we'll take our last break, and we'll talk about the first trial of Martin Guerre right after this. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Stuff You Should Know is brought to you by our friends at Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, where trailblazing runs in the family.
That's right, from introducing a generation to the glory of hops with their iconic pale ale to taking hazy IPAs nationwide with Hazy Little Thing, one of my favorite beers. It's an adventurous spirit that you can taste in every sip.
Yeah, what started in a homebrew shop is now one of America's top craft breweries, known for leading the industry in sustainability. And Sierra Nevada is still family-owned with a passion for innovation and doing things right.
So find your next favorite beer wherever fine beverages are sold, from the original and always boldly hoppy pale ale to the juicy, fruit-forward, hazy little thing. With new brews for every season, there's always something to discover.
Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, still family-owned, operated, and argued over. Visit SierraNevada.com today to taste the difference.
Hey, everybody. Summer is the perfect time for gathering with friends and family in the backyard to enjoy premium cuts of meat, fresh seasonal produce, and more. And of course, we're talking about Whole Foods Market.
And speaking of that meat, you can fire up the grill with premium cuts of meat like no antibiotics ever beef, New York strip steak, and beautifully marbled boneless beef ribeye steak. Your grill will thank you.
And you can also grab and go. Whole Foods Market has grab and go favorites like packaged salads, appetizers, and sides. They're really perfect for bringing to any kind of potluck barbecue.
Yes, plus don't forget dessert. Every gathering needs dessert. You can dig into limited time seasonal pies from their experts in the bakery.
Or how about some adult beverages? You can always fill up that cooler with some summer beers, seltzers, sparkling wine, canned wines, and more. Must be 21 plus, of course, and please drink responsibly.
So make Whole Foods Market your summer grilling destination. Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box.
With no use of coatings, you can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Everything rusts and nobody talks about it because they couldn't fix it until now. With Weber's new rust resistance technology, your Weber will last for years.
Yeah, when used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, which reduces the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. Plus, the griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees.
That's right. And with the Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. So get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
All right. The first trial, I said of Martin Guerre, but we're going to call it the first trial of Arnaud. He was put on trial in a town called R-I-E-U-X.
Rieu.
Rieu?
Rieu.
Rieu?
Rieu.
He was put on trial specifically for stealing another man's identity, adultery, taking his property. And Dave points out very aptly that this is like, in the 16th century, how do you prove something like this?
Mm-hmm.
You could give a memory test, but you know, we already know he has a great memory and kind of did his homework.
Yeah,
you could get villagers up there to testify, which they certainly did, but they're biased. You could, you know, compare him physically, which they did, but it seems like that didn't matter much because some people knew, like, for sure he had different foot size. And also they didn't, you know, have the kind of photographs and handwriting comps and stuff like that. It was a lot easier to get away with something like this back then.
Plus also for just about everybody who said, oh no, his nose was long and flat.
Right.
Others would say, no, it was short and pointy.
Like this guy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, you've got no fingerprinting, no DNA tests, not even like standardized stuff like driver's licenses or passports. There weren't even like wagon licenses at the time. So there really wasn't any way but to hear as many people as possible and then just thoughtfully kind of sort through their testimony. And that first trial at Rieu, Martin Guerre, at a time, or I should say Arnaud Dutille, at a time when a lot of people would have shrunk at the challenge.
Yeah.
Rose to the challenge, maybe more than anybody ever living would have. Like, this guy defended his honor as much as the real Martin Guerre would have. Probably more, actually, as we'll see, as we saw.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is, like, I would say so much of this was impacted solely on the fact that a lot of people like this guy.
Yeah.
You know? And they like the new Martin, and they're not going to go in there in 16th century France and cause a big stink. They're going to say, no, I think it's him. Mm-hmm. He knew this story, and he's got that. I remember that nose.
Right.
And what's the foot size anyway? Those feet can change sizes, right? What do we even know about that?
Yeah, this is what this guy said. So he cross-examined witnesses against him, and for that shoemaker in particular, he said, this man is a drinking companion of Pierre Guerre.
Right.
Let him show his records about the size of my feet.
Right.
He also confronted a man who was his uncle from Sahas, who was Arnaud Dutille's uncle, who said, yeah, that's Arnaud Dutille,
right,
who's cross-examining me right now. He said, I've never seen this man before in my life, and he's my uncle. Why can't he produce other members of my family that say so?
That's so, like, what a confidence person does.
Yes.
A con man is, like, so adamant in their beliefs that that's what they use to trick you.
Yes, and again, it wasn't just him. Bertrand was saying, this man is my husband. I would rather suffer 1,000 cruel deaths than say otherwise.
His sisters did too, right?
Yes, that was a big one. So all four of Martin Guerre's sisters came and testified at this trial that, nope, this is our brother. Like, he's our brother. I don't know what else we can say. And yet, despite the testimony in favor of him, the judge in Rieu said, no, I think you're an imposter and I'm going to find you guilty.
That's right. Do a public apology and a ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Pay your wife 2,000 francs. And this one other little tidbit, we're going to behead you and quarter you.
Right.
And he went, oh, how about we, is there such a thing as appealing to a higher court? And they said, well, unfortunately there is. And so now we will talk about the second trial of Arnault.
This was like to the appellate court, this group of like the finest legal minds in France. They were called the, what were they called, Chuck?
Hold on. Parliament, the Criminal Chamber of the Parliament of Toulouse.
Okay. So they were basically, like I said, the finest legal minds in France who were coming together to hear this story that was pretty much sweeping the, not just the nation, but like this part of Europe.
Yeah.
That there's this guy who's being called an imposter, who's defending himself, and this whole town is split about whether he is who he says he is. And one of the judges in the case was Jean de Coras, who went on to actually write the first and earliest account of this case. He actually wrote two of them. He wrote a sequel that delved a little more into Arnaud Dutille's life. Mm-hmm. But the people who came together to hear this case basically got a even better version of what had happened in Rieux.
That's right. And another example here early on in this trial of Bertrand being very savvy with her moves, because she was basically like, hey, listen, I'm not going to say that this man is an imposter. I think he is my husband. But if he's not, he sure fooled me.
Right, exactly.
Not my fault.
Yeah. He also, so this was another thing too. So the judges really wanted to, this guy to be the real guy.
Yeah.
De Coras says that they put more weight to the affirmative testimony because—
Oh, they wanted him to be Martin?
Yeah.
Okay.
They wanted him to be that. Yeah, they wanted him to not be an imposter.
Gotcha.
So they put more weight into affirmative testimony because they felt that it was more positive than, say, like negative testimony, which was destructive, which makes sense in a legal, like a certain way legally. But mm-hmm. but more than that, the affirmative testimony also affirmed this marriage and this family and this household that was already intact and that didn't want to be split apart. It's not like Bertrand was saying, this man is not my husband. She
right.
was saying, he is my husband. Please leave us alone.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
the judges wanted to support that. And Arnaud Dutille gave them heaping mountains fulls of stuff to go ahead and go along with this. And he actually, he stood up to all this testimony, did it again. He survived all these memory tests. Bertrand hung in there. He got so good, Chuck, that he on the stand said, I just want you to know I forgive you for having to testify against me. I know you don't want to, but
yeah.
I forgive you. I don't hold it against you, dear
That's
wife.
Nice.
That's how much I love you. And yeah. those judges were like, uh-huh. swoon. I wish I was Bertrand. And
That's
he
me, the
actually
hanky.
He won them over, Chuck, and they were about to rule in his favor that he was Martin Guerre, and everybody just shut up about it from now on, except there was a twist that happened, huh?
Yeah, and this would be great for an ad break, but we've already done it. So we'll just say, very simply, a man walks in with a wooden leg in the movie version.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure in the movie version it didn't happen quite like that, but the real Martin Guerre, please, stood up. And all of a sudden, there he was. He's back. The real deal. No one knows why he came back exactly. The speculation is that he heard about this story
because mm-hmm.
It traveled, like you said, kind of throughout, you know, this region of Europe. And that he was like, wait a minute. I'm a jerk and I'm not going to let this stand.
Right. So he showed up like, at almost the last minute that he could have. I'm sure had he shown up later, they would have reopened the case, but they hadn't yet ruled, but they were about to rule in Arnaud's favor.
Like the gavel is up in the,
yes,
in the
essentially,
movie
and this guy shows up and says, wait, yeah, I'm the real Martin Guerre.
Basically.
And they treated him like he was potentially an imposter first, too. They took him into custody. They questioned him separately, and they questioned him, and they questioned Arnaud on the same old memories. And both of them responded like equally well. So the judges are like, oh my God, what is going on here? They'd never had a case like this before. But the thing that I think clinched everything is when he came to the court, when he was presented in court, his family all recognized him. His sisters all said, oh my God, we were wrong. This guy is our real brother.
Sure.
And then Bertrand said, she gulped very heavily, was maybe heard to say under her breath, well, I guess the jig is up, and threw herself at the feet of Martin Guerre and said, I have been duped. I'm so sorry. I can't believe that this imposter got me, but I was fooled. Please forgive me.
Yeah, I was desperate. I wanted my husband back, and this guy tricked me, and I was willing to overlook the differences because I wanted you back so bad, my dear Martin. And it's really interesting. He said he was not, well, two things. First of all, during all this, Arnaud was like, he kept up that con man thing and like went on the attack against Martin, you know, like you're the imposter in a big, big way, which really helped. But then Martin was basically, you know, as far as Bertrand goes, he said, leave, and this is a shortened quote, but leave aside these tears. The wife ought to know her husband. No one is to blame but you.
Yeah.
So he wasn't having it.
No, he was not having it. And the judges even said, well, hey, man, maybe have a little heart. Like, you're the one who left her 8 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And Martin said, silence. That is not a crime. And the judges were like, that's true. It's not a crime. So you just go ahead and keep being a jerk. But we just wanted to put one in on your wife's behalf. But she got off. She did not. The judges did not rule against her. They determined that she had been duped and that the entire blame was squarely on the shoulders of Arnaud Dutille, who would now, yes, be sentenced to death.
Right. And not only was she let off, but they were very kind to the daughter that she had with Martine initially, because technically, as far as the law was concerned, that would make her a bastard, or not Martine, but Arnaud, right?
Right. Yes.
I'm all confused.
Yeah.
That would make her a bastard, which meant she couldn't get inheritance and stuff like that. But they said no at the time. She thought it was her husband, so we're going to make an exception here. So they really did her a couple of favors. But when it came to Arnaud, they really didn't know what to sentence because they had never done anything like this before. So they said, well, I guess let's kind of go with what the other people were saying. Let's kill you, but we'll just hang you and burn your body. We won't quarter you and behead you.
Right, right. I also saw that he was sentenced to be hanged while barefoot and bareheaded. And I cannot for the life of me find what the problem was with that. I think it was just an insult maybe, but...
Probably, like see his face.
Yeah, I guess, but also you see his ugly feet too.
Yeah, well, his feet that are smaller now. And maybe it's also more you need to look upon the people that you have betrayed.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's good. So his sentence was carried out in Artigat. And they actually built the gallows in front of Martin Guerre's house.
Yeah.
Just to give him like a
power move.
Really great view of the whole thing or something like that. He could keep working until the last minute making tiles and then come out and be like, all right, let's go.
Right.
And Arnaud was marched through town. And he finally now he was like, okay, I'm just going to take full credit for this and admitted everything, didn't he?
Yeah. But you guys like me, right?
Right.
But like he's like, I did a good job.
I got you guys. So good.
Yeah, pretty much. He commended the judges for their work. Yeah. He walked through town with the noose around his neck. As you know, they made him carry his own noose around his neck. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end, appealed to Martin, like, hey, be nice to your wife, dude. Like, I fooled her.
Yeah.
She's a woman of honor. Like, don't take this out on her.
Which is pretty great because he could have, out of spite or out of whatever, he could have, like, outed her or even not said anything. But he, to the very end, he declared that she had no idea and had nothing to do with it. And if you go through, you know, Natalie Zeman Davis's lens, that was a really loving gesture. And it reminds you of, like, these two were probably like deeply in love with one another.
Yeah.
And also like it's no small thing, even like in the time of very high infant mortality rates, Chuck, that they lost a child together and that surely bonded them even further. So like the loss that was created at the return of Martin Guerre, this marriage, this actual happy but imposter and illegitimate marriage was torn apart by the legitimate version, but how legitimate was it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it was that unhappy.
Yeah.
Like this man, the real man, managed to interlope into something even more real than what he had created with his own wife.
Yeah. That's a very confusing statement, but I totally get it.
And it also makes it really sad that Arnaud was executed, and I'm sure Bertrand had to watch and pretend like she was happy about it.
Yeah. No one really knows what happened in the end to Bertrand and Martine, the real Martine. Not a lot of details, but they do know that there were three more sons. But, you know, I don't think that necessarily means they reconciled and were happy. This was the 16th century. He could have forced himself upon her, by all I know, you know.
I guess, but they did stay together, and I'm sure he could have gotten a divorce even in Catholic French law at the time. But the illegitimate daughter, Arnaud and Bertrand's daughter, she went to live with the very uncle that Arnaud had said he had never seen him in his life on the stand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's who went and took care of her. And Chuck, our version of the movie ends, I think, mm-hmm. with little Bernard growing up a little bit and saying, Uncle, can you tell me about my dad? And the uncle and Bernard start walking back to the house from the barn. And the uncle says, kid, you wouldn't believe it if I tried.
That's great.
Don't you think?
Perfect ending.
Okay, yeah. So since Chuck said perfect ending, I think that means that it's time for listener mail.
You know what? In lieu of listener mail, we do this a couple of times a year when we rarely ask for support in helping to spread the word. Even here in year 13, we still want to grow the Stuff You Should Know audience and make sure people are tuning in. So tell a friend or a neighbor or a family member about Stuff You Should Know, if you would. And review and rate us on iTunes, because that always helps.
iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts.
Wherever you find podcasts, we always appreciate it. This is the show that grew very organically because of this kind of thing many years ago.
Definitely.
And we don't ask for it much, but we continue to count on that for growth.
Yes. So thank you to everybody who's ever rated or reviewed us. And thank you just for listening, too. We appreciate you guys listening, even if you don't lift a finger.
Amen.
Well, since Chuck said amen, that's the end of this episode, which I think I've already done. I'm losing my mind. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.